On Tech News Today, we'll reveal Android Auto's deep, dark secrets. Plus, some of the world's smartest people are calling for a ban on robot killing machines. And a guy in New Zealand builds the ultimate house for Android fans. It's all coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, July 27th, 2015. This episode is brought to you by Intel. Small business owners can't afford to choose between A or B. If both help your business, you want A and B. With Intel-powered 2-in-1s, you get performance and mobility. Power and freedom. That's the power of and. Experience it at smallbusiness.intel.com. And by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace that connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/twit and receive a $50 Visa gift card when you get a loan. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with a journalist who report it. My name is Mike Elgin, and our co-anchor today is Wall Street Journal tech reporter Lisa Fleischer. Hey, Lisa, how are you doing today?
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great. You're over there in London, and so it's what, about a little after 6 p.m.? Is that right?
Just after 6, the rain has stopped.
All right. Well, wonderful. The rain hasn't started here. It hasn't rained here since around 2005. But we're hearing that there's going to be an El Nino that's going to wipe us out with biblical flooding. So something for us to look forward to. Well, we got a ton of news and a couple of really great guests, Lisa. So why don't we jump right into the news? The Federal Communications Commission approved Friday AT&T's $49 billion acquisition of DirecTV. Brian Fung wrote about the story for The Washington Post and joins us now. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being on. Always glad to have you on. Now, what are the major assets the merger brings to AT&T?
Well, the big thing is content. So AT&T is acquiring all of the television programming that DirecTV streams to its customers. And the reason why AT&T wants to do this is it realizes now that just being a dumb pipe operator is not going to cut it in the 21st century. The big thing moving forward is to find new ways, new revenue streams. And that means providing some kind of value-added content, some kind of exclusive content, which DirecTV has.
And so dumb pipes, we've been hearing a lot about that. When we were growing up, we just thought, they're their phone companies. But, you know, what's really been the big transition in this industry?
Well, I think, you know, you're seeing that with the FCC moving forward with policies like net neutrality, they've, you know, increased the basic definition of broadband. That's making it a little bit harder for internet providers to simply make money off of the networks that they're operating. And they've certainly complained as much before the FCC. And so, you know, it's not just AT&T. You also have companies like Verizon buying AOL, and they've gone on the record saying that their new streaming video app is also going to include content from AOL. You have NBCU being bought up by Comcast back in 2011. They were, in some ways, the sort of original pioneers of this model where, you're a cable operator and an internet provider, and you buy up a whole lot of content that you can then offer to consumers, to your subscribers for either an extra fee or you bundle it somehow with your existing packages and make money that way. So this is something that, you know, analysts say is going to be the future for communications and media.
Enough about AT&T. Let's talk about me. I'm an existing AT&T subscriber. Will I get any major benefits around this? For example, NFL Sunday ticket. Will I get that on my smartphone and my iPhone now?
Yeah, so AT&T's big plan here is to send the content that DirecTV has, such as NFL Sunday Ticket, to mobile devices. So at some point, you'll be able to leave your house, probably use your mobile phone on AT&T's 3G or 4G network and watch live sports that way. There's going to be all sorts of other content that you'll be able to access too. And by the way, this won't just be an AT&T thing. You know, again, with Verizon said to be coming out with its streaming video app by late summer. You know, it's going to be pretty likely that Verizon customers will also get some of the same experiences, you know, watching streaming videos on their tablets or their mobile phones while they're not connected to Wi-Fi.
And Brian, a quick follow-up. Now, this deal came with some requirements on AT&T, on AT&T's part. Can you talk about what those requirements are? I mean, one of them is that they have to build out fiber. Another is that they have to expand their reach to certain demographics. Can you talk a little bit about those requirements?
Absolutely, yeah. So the first one you mentioned is really important. The AT&T deal actually requires AT&T to build high-speed fiber optic internet to 12.5 million, what they call, you know, end connections. And if AT&T fails to meet that goal by the end of 4 years, all of the conditions that it's agreed to, not just that one, will be extended until AT&T finishes its build-out. So that's really important. The other one, I think, which is going to be really relevant to people, is that you know, AT&T has agreed to build or agreed to offer free or discounted, you know, some kind of low-cost internet plan to people who are on food stamps. So you know, if you, for example, are a food stamp recipient and you live in a part of the country that is served by AT&T, you'll be able to buy, you know, for about $10 a month, a plan that that gives you access to either 10 megabits of speed per second or something slightly lower for a lesser price. So AT&T is making a commitment to offer that low-cost internet, again, for 4 years and with the possibility of extensions if it hasn't completed its fiber optic build-out by then. And there are a number of other conditions as well that, you know, some of which will affect consumers and others are you know, going to be mainly about transparency and reporting and that kind of thing.
Now, you wrote a completely unrelated story about Facebook. Now, we've talked about Facebook's internet.org and how they subsidize data connections in the developing world, essentially enabling people to log onto Facebook and a bunch of other sites for free. It was controversial in India because it was seen as a net neutrality violation. And you wrote a story about how Facebook is expanding that. Can you talk briefly about that particular event?
Yeah, so Facebook is coming up on its one-year anniversary for internet.org, which is the project that Facebook launched with a number of other partners to try and get more of the world connected to the internet and then, by extension, connected to Facebook. And so as part of its one-year anniversary, Facebook and internet.org have announced that they're expanding their program so that now any mobile network provider can work with Facebook and internet.org to offer services, free services to low-income residents of foreign countries, developing countries. You know, the key difference here is that before, internet.org was working with roughly 12 carriers in about 17 countries. Now, any network provider who's interested in working with internet.org can sign up for more information and possibly strike a partnership with the initiative. And this, you know, according to Facebook, should give a lot more people access to the web. But again, it's also important, as you say, to point out here that there are still lingering questions about whether or not you know, the offering of free services you know, potentially violates net neutrality.
Yeah, we'll see how that plays. I'm sure it'll be different in different regions and countries around the world. Brian Fung is at the Washington Post. I always say the Washington Post for some reason. It's at WashingtonPost.com. And you can follow him on Twitter at B_Fung. Brian, thank you so much for joining us today on Tech News Today.
My pleasure.
Well, we got some more news for you coming right up. But first, we want to tell you about our new sponsor. The show is brought to you by the one and only Intel. If you're a small business owner, you don't have room for compromises. You know, you got to. Sometimes you feel like you have to make a choice between a tablet and the flexibility and simplicity of a tablet or the power and usefulness and business readiness of a laptop. But with Intel's two-in-ones, they give you the laptop performance that you need and the power that you need, as well as the mobility and ease of use of a tablet. And these devices, you've seen them. If you go and buy some of the best two-in-ones out there, it's going to have Intel inside. Specifically, the best ones are going to have the Intel Core M processor just for two-in-ones. This is a fantastic chipset
that is just turning these devices into monsters of productivity and also great for entertainment. Whatever it is you're going to use any sort of mobile device for, these two-in-ones are the best in the business. Take a keyboard off, put the keyboard back on, use it however you like, and you also future-proof your device. So it's very cost-effective if you have a business because these things are going to remain powerful. They have amazing battery life. They're 2.5 times faster on average than a typical four-year-old laptop. Try doing that with your existing tablet. Try getting that kind of performance out of your existing tablet. We're talking about battery life up to 8.7 hours and just incredible power, performance, battery life, everything you want in a mobile device. And Intel, of course, is the leader in providing these kinds of solutions. If you want to know more about this, here's a great resource for you. Just go to Intel's Twitter account, which is Intel Small Biz, and you'll get updates on this chipset and this this category of device. Experience the power of and. Visit smallbusiness.intel.com and find out how Intel Power 2-in-1s can improve your small business. That's smallbusiness.intel.com. And we thank Intel for their support of Tech News Today. Ars Technica's Ron Amadio spent a week driving around a car that's powered by Android Auto. In addition to getting a review out of it, which you can read on the Ars Technica site, he also discovered some interesting secrets buried in the code. Ron Amadio is a reviews editor at Ars Technica and joins us now. Welcome to you, Ron.
Hey, Mike. Great to be here.
Glad you're here again. Now, before we get into your article about non-functional hidden features, can you first tell us your overall impression of Android Auto after literally test driving it?
It's really nice. The big problem with these car infotainment systems is that they're all built by car companies, and they're more used to engine grease and horsepower than they are, you know, tenets of good software design. So Android Auto kind of takes a nice smartphone interface and embeds it in your car dashboard. And you get great stuff like Google Maps and a bunch of different music apps and messaging apps. And you can use them right in your car, so it's safer. It's a little easier. There's a couple rough edges that make it a little weird, like it's definitely a first-gen product. But overall, it's a big improvement over the weird proprietary systems that car manufacturers are using.
Well, can you tell us a little bit about what it's actually like to sit there and use it? Like, what does it feel like? Is it going to cause distracted driving, that sort of thing? How do you use it even when you're sitting there?
Yeah, there's like a constant balance between functionality and safety with one of these things. So the vast majority of it is voice command. So you can press a button on the steering wheel, and you know the usual Google voice recognition kicks on, and you can tell it to play music or navigate somewhere, or even ask it, you know, a question like what time is Home Depot open or something like that, and it'll answer. It's pretty cool. And then you can reach over and poke the touchscreen and kind of flip through like a limited selection of Google Now cards and music, media, text messages, not too much else. It's pretty limited for a car interface. Like, it won't take over everything that a car infotainment system can do, but it kind of covers the big use cases.
Now, you went through the code and found some really interesting things inside of there. What are the non-advertised, non-functional potential features that you discovered in the code?
There's a developer mode that will bring up all these interface mockups that I guess somebody at Google did. So there's a roadside assistance app that kind of looks fully designed, at least, and you know, shows you where the tow truck is and where you are on a map and how long it'll take to get there. And then there's a vehicle check app that'll kind of do like diagnostics and let you know how long it's been since your last service history. And it tells you to go to the dealership and, you know, schedule a checkup. And so eventually, I guess they hope to be able to do all these diagnostics and take over more of the infotainment system stuff. And then there's also a bunch of extra sensors in there that they don't use. So like Android Auto is listening for all sorts of car integration signals. So like whether or not in the terms of service, it says it can tell if the passenger seat is occupied or not, which I guess would let it kick over to like a co-pilot mode or something. Because right now everything's designed as like you're driving down the road at 60 miles an hour and everything's designed to be like a quick glance. It's not very in-depth. Where if it detected someone was sitting in the passenger seat, maybe it could click over into like a higher functionality mode. But it's listening for like what gear you're in, air conditioning data, like the current temperature and what temperature you want it to be. So maybe it'll control air conditioning one day. It has just about all the stuff for a gauge cluster. So like your speed, RPMs, fuel data, all that stuff. So it's listening for this. It's not necessarily receiving it. But it's interesting that they kind of left all of this in the code. And it's rare that Google does that and it doesn't someday become functional. So maybe Android Auto version 2 will do a little more car integration.
So what makes you think that, things that Google writes into the code are going to eventually become functional? Tell me a little bit about their history there of that.
I've been doing, we call them teardowns. I've been doing where you kind of take the file, the APK that you would get from the Play Store, and you can decompile it and basically read the code in there. And this is kind of how I started writing. So I've been doing this for maybe like 2-3 years, and the hit rate is pretty good. Google will just kind of
give us features. Give us some of the biggest hits. Yeah.
So the timeline thing that was revamped the other day, found that like years and years ago in the Google Maps code, and they eventually released like a way older version of it. What else? Lane guidance in Google Maps, that showed up first. A million other things
in the code. So you would find this all in the code, and eventually they'd sort of turn a switch on, huh?
Yeah, they're kind of, I guess they're like mid development process, and they're just like, okay, ship it, and then you just kind of see all these weird little dead ends in the code. At least it used to be like that. Nowadays, I've been told that code gets audited for unreleased features now because too much of the stuff was leaking.
That's funny. For example, just now. So Android Auto doesn't play videos, to the best of my knowledge, yet there's a no video mode. What do you make of that?
Yeah, that's weird. There's a couple restrictive modes. So one is like no messaging or limited messaging, no keyboard, no video. We know like no keyboard is in use because if you throw it in the park, a keyboard will pop up for Google Maps and you can type stuff in on the screen. But if you put it in drive, the keyboard goes away. So maybe they had planned on doing video at some point. I mean, it's an 8-inch screen. I could see you like parked eating lunch and watching videos on the screen or something. I mean, there's no reason for it not to, as long as it knows you're not driving. But I don't know. That's the only thing we've seen of video. So maybe that was something they tried and then abandoned. But you know, who knows? Half the fun of this is seeing what actually comes out in the next update.
When you buy your next car, do you think you are going to be tempted to go with Android Auto? What do you think at this point?
I want my next car to be self-driving so that I don't care and don't have to worry about safety and driving and all that. I just want to sit there on my laptop while the car goes and does things.
Okay, great. Sounds like you're going to be driving an Apple then. All right, Ron Amadio is at ArsTechnica.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at Ron Amadio. Thank you so much for joining us today, Ron.
Thank you.
An organization called the Future of Life Institute has published an open letter warning of an AI arms race. The letter calls for a UN ban on offensive autonomous weapons, Skynet, basically, and it was signed by Steve Wozniak, Stephen Hawking, Elon Musk, and other famous geniuses. The letter points out that, unlike nuclear weapons, autonomous AI weapons will be cheap and ubiquitous, and that scares the daylights out of me. I don't know about you, Lisa. Are you worried about the coming robot war against humanity?
Yeah, of course. Totally worried. But what worries me a little bit is who is this supposed to be written for, I guess. I mean, the people that are going to be developing is weapons potentially aren't going to be with any sort of organization that has any say over them or any control over them, right? Isn't that kind of the point, like the difference between these and nuclear weapons? Or am I missing something here?
Yeah, no, I think that what they're looking at is they're trying to avoid the kind of proliferation that has happened with automatic weapons, for example, with anti-aircraft weapons. I think that you and I are probably in agreement that this is an almost perfectly futile effort, partly because if certain, let's say, for example, NATO agreed to a ban on these kinds of weaponry, okay, well, China might not do so. North Korea might not do so. Lots of countries might not do that. Al-Qaeda, ISIS might not stick to such a ban. You know they won't. And so, you know,
these kinds of weapons. ISIS promised.
What's that?
ISIS promised.
Yeah, right. That's a reputable organization if there ever was one. So, you know, I think that the realities of defensive, you know, systems and countermeasures that against potential threats is going to govern this. And if they can come up with a non-autonomous defense against autonomous weaponry, and we're talking about weaponized drones that operate with artificial intelligence, mostly, I would guess, not humanoid Arnold Schwarzenegger shaped robots walking around with machine guns. We're talking about airplanes that have bombs and guns on them and stuff like that are basically operating on their own. Then, you know, if you can counter those without artificial intelligence, self functioning vehicles, then that'd probably be better. So I just think that trying to raise awareness of the fact that, you know, they're looking ahead, they're futurists, and they're looking ahead and saying, okay, it's going to be cheap, it's going to be easy to build, you know, and so we need to ban them immediately so there's not an arms race in this type of technology. Because if there's like 100,000 of them flying around, then we're all in trouble.
I mean, the thing that's going to be the big question here is, what is the definition of some sort of artificial intelligence weapon or artificially intelligent weapon or defense system or whatnot? Because you have so many, like, you know, things that we use in our everyday lives now that maybe 25 years ago people would have thought of that as artificial intelligence, but we don't necessarily. I mean, if you ask Siri a question versus, you know, some of the more advanced things that we've been seeing coming out, where does the line get drawn? And if you actually do have some sort of ban, you know, I guess there'd be lots of negotiations over the definition of everything. But I think, you know, you're right in the idea that they're trying to draw attention to this. And I look forward to the forthcoming movie.
And in the future, of course, artificial intelligence robots will be able to write letters like this. And the humans would just have to sign them. Well, in other news, Chinese police have broken up a Beijing factory that produced more than 41,000 fake iPhones. Some of these phones were reportedly shipped to the United States and sold in the U.S. 9 suspects were arrested, including the husband and wife team that ran the operation. Lisa Fleischer, they had hundreds of employees. This is quite an operation. 41,000 isn't a lot by Apple standards, but for a tiny company churning out knockoffs, that's a lot of fake iPhones. And they were basically buying old used parts and cramming them into these phones and selling them as brand new iPhones.
And they only, what was it, something like $17 million worth of product. I think with that, the first thought that I had was, wow, it really says something about how huge of a company Apple is that I would think, oh, they just had 17 million in counterfeits. Yeah. And like, oh, that's not that much.
Yeah, BlackBerry would take that in a second. Well,
also, I mean, I'd love to get my hands on them and just try them out and see if I could feel the difference.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, some of the better knockoffs that are made by more legitimate companies and running Android and so on. And they just, you know, they get really, really close to copying the Apple look and feel and all that kind of stuff. You know, some of them are pretty good. I mean, they have some features that that iPhones don't have. So, yeah, I'd love to get my hands on one, too.
I think they go really great with my Gucci bag.
Yeah, your Gucci bag and your you know, $15,000 Lexus.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, well, Recode is reporting that Yahoo will hold an event this week in New York, midweek sometime, to unveil a new consumer product. Lisa Fleischer, any wild guesses about what they're going to announce this week?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. What was the last thing was that they were revamping their fantasy sports app to make some money off of that. I mean, Yahoo's been doing a lot of unexpected things for a long time. We were launching into news, launching into you know, things that you wouldn't necessarily have associated the brand with. I don't know. What do you think?
I have no idea. None at all. It's, you know, it's Yahoo. I was hoping that when Marissa Meyer took over, that they would stop being a company that just gobbles up, acquires a bunch of companies, and then 3 years later announces that they're closing them. And doing little else, as far as you can tell. I'd like to see them do something big and bold, something out of the box, and not just say, oh, you know, we're doing another redesign of Flickr, or we're, you know, something like that, another acquisition. I'd like to see them I'd like to see them build something from scratch that nobody saw coming.
Maybe they can build a phone and get advice about it from Jeff Bezos?
Yeah, maybe. Or maybe they're going to have a space program like Jeff Bezos. Who knows? Well, we'll find out hopefully Wednesday or maybe Thursday, something like that.
They're going to paint the sky purple.
Yeah, that would be great. In product update news, Google announced today that a Google Plus account will no longer be required for logging into other Google sites, including YouTube. The change will be rolled out gradually. I personally think this is great news. I think that when they integrated, especially YouTube with Google Plus, it probably improved YouTube and probably damaged Google Plus, because there was this effluent of like troll culture that came washing into Google Plus. And then when they removed their real names policy, it got even worse. But anyway, it's great news. My theory is that all of these integrations, these forced integrations, were forced by Vic Gundotra, and he was forced out or quit or something like that. And after he left, they've been dismantling all of those integrations. And this is probably the biggest dismantlement of them all. What do you think about this, Lisa? Is this a good move for Google?
Well, I just wonder what this whole thing has been like from a user experience perspective, because I know personally, I remember I didn't really use Google Plus. I had to sign in to Yahoo. I had to sign in as a certain specific user every time I wanted to use YouTube. And I found myself going back and forth between the different profiles, and then I couldn't figure out where my videos were. So, I mean, as somebody, I think for the average person, this might make the whole experience a little bit easier. I wonder, though, what it's going to do for the company as, in terms of its goals for integration, for how it wants to use its data across products. And maybe this just indicates that, it's not as important for them to have that kind of integration. I wonder what this says about, the importance of their mobile strategy and how that connects with this.
Yeah, I wonder, too. And to a certain extent, it's more cosmetic than it sounds. You still need a universal Google username and password to use all the Google sites, Google Play, YouTube, whatever. And that same username and password will get you into Google Plus. And so it's less of a jarring difference. What is different is that they won't make you go through the charade of signing up for a Google Plus account if you don't want to use it. And so you'll actually have to go and say, yes, I want to sign up for Google Plus, and I want to, here's what you do, and here's what, but it's the same username and password, no matter what. So
yeah, I mean, and YouTube is becoming such a force with all of the YouTube stars. Obviously it just can't have as much kind of sway within the company as Google Plus.
Yeah, absolutely. And, Google Plus doesn't even have advertising. And YouTube is like the future of Google advertising to a certain extent, because they have those high-dollar video ads.
I hear that advertising is important to Google.
Yeah, I've heard that too. To the tune of what? What is it, like 93 to 95% of their revenue? What is it, Lisa?
Oh, I don't know. I'm sorry. Yeah. I don't have
It's north of 90%. So it's, they're pretty much an advertising company. So I guess advertising is important. Well, in security news, the cybersecurity firm Zimperium has reported a vulnerability in Android that enables hackers to gain remote access without detection. The problem is with a media library called Stagefright, which has multiple vulnerabilities in it, and the flaw affects versions 2.2, 5.1, and everything in between, which covers about 95% of all Android users. To exploit the flaw, a hacker would send a media file over MMS that gives access to the phone, enabling remote control of the phone's microphone and theft of emails, files, and ID information. Users of Silent Circle's Black Phone, which we told you about on multiple occasions, and which are running private OS version 1.1.7, are already protected from this flaw. Lisa, why aren't security phones like the Black Phone more popular with users? I mean, there's so many vulnerabilities out there. There's so much risk. Why do you think that the public generally ignores them?
Probably because they're pretty expensive. Mm-hmm. What's the price on the black phone again? I forget, like $600 or something.
It's up there in iPhone territory, yeah.
Yeah, and like, you know, it's also not, it's a, maybe we've known it for a couple of years, but it's not a household name. There's not really people who know it. I mean, if you go into a Best Buy over there, you're going to see it on the shelf. Are there going to be salespeople pitching it? And, you know, the kind of average person's security, I guess, I actually have been a little disappointed that people aren't more worried about their security. I think that people are getting a little bit of like blasé about the whole thing and thinking that their banks will protect them. And, you know, maybe once they see their, you know, deep inner photos or something like that from their phone plastered all over the internet, they'll think about a black phone purchase in the future. But that's still, like, I'm sure, a very small minority of people.
Yeah, you're probably right. Well, yeah. We'll see. We'll see if someday the, you know, and by the way, if the world does suddenly become security obsessed when they buy their phones, that's great news for BlackBerry, because that's where that company is headed. They're getting into the sort of enterprise security market in a big way in multiple ways. And so if that becomes an obsession of the public, especially the business using public, then that is great news. They could actually make a comeback of some kind.
Right. And also, I mean, that's also Black Phone's goal as well, is to become a more of a business enterprise product, because they know that the IT people who actually know what they're talking about know what they're doing. If they feel like this is important to the company, they will essentially force it top down. So I don't expect your average teenager or, you know, person on the street to be using or really even care about a super secure phone, but the enterprise consumer will. God, yeah. I hate that word enterprise.
Yeah. Yes, me too. Well, we got some more news coming up, and if you're an Android user, you can love what we have coming up. But first, let's talk about Prosper, one of our sponsors today. Prosper is America's first peer-to-peer lending marketplace. They invented the category, and essentially they enable people to invest in each other, in their dreams, in their goals. You can borrow up to $35,000 in as few as 5 days and use the money for just about anything you want. You can pay off high-rate credit cards. You can fix up your house. You can put it into a business. You can, you know, buy a car with Android Auto in it. There's lots of things that you can do with Prosper. And of course, you never want to borrow from family and friends. It's a terrible way to borrow money. You don't want to go to the bank. That's sort of like last century's way to borrow money. Prosper is the way to borrow money. Essentially, you put a listing on the site saying what you need the money for, and investors come along and invest in your project. They have 2 million members. They've facilitated $4 billion in loans, and they've empowered 250,000 people. Now and for a limited time, Prosper is offering TWIT viewers a $50 Visa gift card with your low-interest loan. You can get up to $35,000 in your account in as few as 5 days and a $50 Visa gift card. Just go to prosper.com/TWIT for this special offer that's just for you, the TWIT fans out there watching Tech News Today. Well, in news you can lose, plastic engineer and graphic designer Jono Williams built a sci-fi house in New Zealand he calls the Sky Sphere. The one-room home runs on solar power and is highly automated. For example, a refrigerator built into the couch notifies Williams when he's running low on beer. The best part, well, maybe the best part is the beer part, but the second best part is that the entire home is run from an Android app. This is really cool. Would you want to live in an Android house, Lisa, on a giant like post like this?
I don't think that we need to put our living room on a post in order to get the functionality that he's gotten. Pretty soon we're all going to be doing this, and I really hope my next house comes with a built-in beer fridge in the couch.
Yes.
But seriously, I mean, there's so much of this that is already reality in people's everyday, well, in some people's homes. I would say that there's, you know, a lot more functionality in people who have the money to spend, or like WSJ columnist Jeff Fowler, who gets a kit out of his home just to try everything out. But, you know, look, we just saw the Android Auto app being tried out, or a system. And this is we don't have to put ourselves in a admittedly cool looking ball that's completely solar powered for the average person to have this kind of functionality pretty soon.
And one of the weird things about this house, so let me describe it for people who are listening to this. Essentially, it's like a water tower. It's like, in fact, it may be a water tower. There's a ladder inside a pole that goes up to this. It's a hockey puck shaped house, and it's got this like poles around it. But the weirdest thing of all is that the glass, the windows, it's windows all the way around, are orange. And so living in this thing would be a nightmare. Everything would be orange all the time, I would guess.
Well, first of all, actually, what it kind of reminds me of is the World's Fair site, you know, in New York. But the pictures from the inside look like there's either not a tint, or maybe like he can change the colors of it or something. So I'm thinking maybe he's got colored lights that just make the whole place glow. But, you know, it's that kind of aesthetic. I mean, guys, picture almost like a golf ball, a see-through golf ball on a tee. That's what this thing looks like.
And you're right. I see colored lights at the top, and the picture Jason just showed, it shows essentially clear windows. So those are lights. It's not the glass.
Yeah, and you probably don't have to live like Bono your entire life if you live there, though. Yeah,
exactly. Wow. Anyway, very cool. Well, our TNT fan of the day is Escudero, who posted this picture on Twitter taken at Campus Party Mexico in Guadalajara. Campus Party, by the way, is an annual LAN party and hackathon that goes 24 hours a day for a full week, I believe. And there we are, joining them for Campus Party Mexico. How cool. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup or your campus party and post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook, and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT so we can find it. Lisa Fleischer, what's going on with you these days? What's going on at Wall Street Journal? I think you have like a little bit of news to divulge for us.
I'm in the transition now, and I'm going to work for the Journal's new app. I'm probably not supposed to talk too much about it, but it's a bit hush-hush. There's already been a story written about it. So it's a news digest app, and it's called What's News. And so it's supposed to be kind of a look at the top 10 stories that are the most important right now. As a reporter, I'll just put in that what I find interesting about all this is that you have all these news organizations who are kind of trying to figure out what's the best way to tell stories on mobile. And so you have a few different types of news digests out there, and this is going to be the Journal's stab at that.
Sounds awesome. You know, everybody who watches and listens to this show is really into technology news, so we'll all be looking for that. And congratulations on that move. That sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. You're like on the forefront of what's happening in news because it's really going to the apps, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, what I really want when I'm commuting, even myself, is just something where I can flip through. And one of the problems with mobile is you don't have news is so rich, and so there's so much to it that it takes a lot to kind of load up on your phone. So that's one thing that news companies are trying to give to readers, is something just sort of fast that they can understand, get through, find something smart, and how they can just best take advantage of the mobile technology.
All right. Well, Lisa Fleischer is at Lisa Fleischer on Twitter, just Lisa Fleischer, and you should follow her immediately. Lisa, thank you so much for calling today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much. This was fun.
All right. Take care. Well, you can subscribe to Tech News Today on Stitcher, or you can choose some other way to subscribe at twit.tv/TNT. There's also a lot of information about the show there. You can also watch us live every weekday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1700 UTC at twit.tv/live. You can follow us on Twitter at Tech News Today TV, and you can follow me on Twitter at Mike Elgin. Also, don't miss our other news show, Tech News Tonight, at 4 p.m. Pacific every single weeknight. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the Tech News Today. The show is produced by Jason Cleanthes and edited by Anthony Nielsen. My name is Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.